From Mothman and Nessie to the spirit that haunts your home, welcome to Bob After Dark, a podcast about legends, lore, and the supernatural. So turn your lights down and your volume up and enjoy your trip to the shadows.
Children of the night, welcome to Bob After Dark, the show that takes you into the shadows and goes and says hello everything that goes bump in the night. I'm your host with the most that enjoys toast, Bob, and alongside of me, as always, is my ever wonderful, ever vampiric, ever cape wearing, ever the heartthrob of Bob After Dark, Count Panic himself. Oh, hey there, Count.
Oh, hi, hello, hey. There, Bob. How's it going today?
Oh, it goes, Count Panic.
Good, good. Where does it go?
Oh, it goes somewhere.
It goes somewhere, right? It always goes somewhere. Good to be back here. Another episode on Bob After Dark. I got a feeling I'm really going to enjoy this episode, Bob.
Oh, why do you say that, Count?
I hear there's a certain theme of this evening, but I'm sure we'll get to that here soon enough.
We're absolutely going to get to that soon enough. Welcome, Bob After Dark, a show about legends, lore, and supernatural. Live on our show every Tuesday night here at WJOB Studios, and then to you guys in podcast land, uploaded every week for your commuting pleasure. Count, everybody wants to know, this is the important stuff.
Yes.
The Count Panic weekend update.
Well, you know, I had a pretty good weekend here, Bob, of course, on Saturday morning, just making sure I'm not too hot here. Of course, Saturday morning, got kicked off with our friends at the... You know, remember our friends in downtown Hammond Council?
Yeah.
For haunting in Hammond. Of course, haunting in Hammond couldn't happen this year due to, of course, the pandemic that's sweeping the nation here. Yeah. But they had a little scaled back event. It's called Haunting Off Holman for all the local folks. Holman Avenue, of course, there in Hammond. Great place to visit. But they had a little yard sale going on, a community yard sale. That was pretty cool. A lot of Halloween aspects involved with that as well. A lot of Halloween tchotchkes out there. Also, spent some of my Saturday with you, Bob. It was your it was your 30th birthday Saturday, and I was happy to spend the evening with you there. And I'm glad you fully recovered.
Oh, yes. Let's just say I may have indulged a little bit in some spirits.
I think, well, different spirits of a different kind, right? These were different
Count,
spirits.
That's, you know.
Okay. I won't reveal your secrets there, Bob, but I'm glad to see you bounce back and you're a healthy... 30-year-old. I was 30 years old years ago in the dark ages, so.
What was it like back when you were 30? You guys were dealing with, like, the bubonic plague, weren't you?
Yeah, we were dealing with all that stuff. It was a tough time for us there, but, you know, we made it through it, and now we're in 2020, where it's still pretty bad as far as the viruses go, but you know what? It was great to share some times with you, your 30th birthday. You only turned 30 once, although you turn whatever you age you turn once, but it was a great time, and yeah. Also, I'm glad to see we survived Sasquatch out there in the region
we
as
did,
well.
Absolutely. If you guys haven't had a chance to check out the Panic in the Region episode hosted by some guy that strangely looks like you.
Who is that guy?
Handsome gentleman.
Very, yeah. Not as good looking as me, but still a good looking guy.
I was invited to go out to the Panic in the Region.
Oh, he has the same last name as me, too.
How about strange. That? Maybe he's an ancestor.
Maybe.
So we went out to an undisclosed forest location last week, and we were able to film an episode of Panic in the Region, and we were searching for Sasquatch and didn't find one, unfortunately, but
no. Well, you know what? That's what happens a lot with these searches. You look around, you try to see if you could find anything, and it ends up with a whole lot of nothing, but it's about the time being spent together with friends, right, Bob?
I would say so, Cal.
Yeah, so luckily we survived all that.
Right.
We live to tell about it.
I had something like that. And my weekend update, I did celebrate my birthday, which was very much exciting, and had a blast with that. And
now, what was the highlight, would you say, Bob?
Oh, man, the surprise gathering that was thrown together.
Surprise gathering.
That was a lot of fun.
That was a lot of fun.
We had a good time. Social distance gathering. It was a lot of fun.
We were, yes, passing the cup from distances.
Absolutely. But, yeah, so that was a lot of fun. Yeah. You showed up to surprise me. And it was fun. I enjoyed that.
Yeah.
If this is your first time ever watching or listening to Bob After Dark, we, again, talk about legends, lore, supernatural, lights in the sky, strange bumps in the night, and odd phenomena that goes on in the world around you. We cover weird, spooky news stories that are submitted to you submitted to me by you, the listeners, and we cover weird lore of the week.
We do.
And we're in October, which means we're officially in the real season that Bob After Dark exists.
The veil is at its thinnest.
The veil is getting thin. Oh. It's not its thinnest, Count. Now, don't get overtly excited here. So the veil is thinning as we speak. We're almost to that point of Samhain or Halloween, however you would choose to celebrate it. And man, I can't be more excited. Halloween, it's that just that chill in the air, the haunting feels, and the pumpkins, the apple cider, the pumpkin donuts too, if you get those at your local orchards. It was my favorite time of year, and it's always strange because I was like, how do you celebrate Halloween time at Bob After Dark? Because we talk about this stuff every week throughout the year, so we got to make it something special. And this year we're going to be talking about classic monster stories you find in fiction. Where does the lore come from, and is there any truth to the stories? And this week, we're celebrating Count Panic back there behind the glass, and we're talking about vampires this week.
How about that? I waited almost 2 years for this episode. It's finally here.
What are you talking about? The very first episode of Bob After Dark.
Was I here?
Yes! first episode of Bob After Dark back when it was just radio only.
Well, that doesn't count.
It still counts. It's just, it's been a long time. Mm-hmm. And it's time to revisit it, and I'm very much excited to be sharing this experience with you, Kat.
I'm very excited, too. So we got to wait. Build up the anticipation for that there.
Absolutely. You want to dive right into the spooky news of the week?
Sure.
All right. This one was actually not submitted. I found this one on my own. And this comes to us all the way from Liverpool.
Liverpool.
Count, what am I afraid of in the world?
Dolls, Bob. You're afraid of dolls.
I certainly am afraid of dolls. And in this case, in Liverpool, there is a horrifying doll that has been nailed to a tree. And it is definitely spooking the local citizens. This is sent to us from the Mirror.com, UK website for their news. And it's saying that the mysterious cursed doll is tied by a rope onto a small piece of wood and is covered by a sign which reads "Evil lives here" on a tree in Old Swan, Liverpool. Locals are spooked by a creepy doll that has been nailed to a tree close by a busy road junction in Liverpool. The mysterious doll is tied by a rope on a small piece of wood and is covered by a sign that reads again, "Evil lives here." It's also pinned up by a rusty nail like a stake through the figure heart, Liverpool Echo reports. It was first spotted by local Don Hall, who passes a sign in Old Swan area regularly on her way to work, and she said it is baffling everybody.
I would be baffled, too.
Hashtag panic.
Well, I'd be very baffled, too. I mean, has there been any investigation into this or no whatsoever?
No, because there's no, like... This isn't a remote area, so this isn't a part of somebody's, like, Halloween display or anything. It's just this weird, creepy doll that's just been hung to a tree. And it's not like, you know, the classic baby doll look. It's almost like, looks like a voodoo doll almost, made
out
of yarn.
So you think there's somebody out there that maybe put a hex on somebody and nailed him to the pole here, or nailed whoever to the pole here?
It's definitely something, and it's horrifying to see. And you got to think, if you're just a random commuter and you see that passing through, you definitely would be a little spooked yourself.
So what do you do in that case? Do you take it down or do you leave it up? Or is it
cursed
to take it down?
Apparently it's still up. Huh. Now, you can ask me personally if I would remove it.
You remove it?
God, no, I wouldn't touch that thing. Count, listen, I have very few rules here on Bob After Dark, one of which is don't remove the cursed doll from the tree.
That's good. Yeah, that's probably best there. So, and plus, if you're the one to remove it, only bad things could happen to you, right? That's how it usually goes in the movies. You touch something that's sacred or you remove something that's sacred or is supposed to be there, then bad things start happening to you.
Which is actually a good segue into the next story.
I had no clue.
Hold that question, Cal. Okay. Archaeologists just unveiled a fully intact mummy that's been sealed for 2,500 years. This comes to us from Science Alert, and actually, I believe I dug up the story, too. Archaeologists in Egypt said Saturday that they have found 59 well-preserved and sealed wooden coffins over recent weeks that have been buried for more than 2,500 years ago. Opening one of them ornately Opening one of the ornately decorated sarcophagi before assembled media, the team revealed mummified remains wrapped in a burial cloth that bore hieroglyphic inscriptions in bright colors. The dramatic find was unearthed south of Cairo in the sprawling burial ground of Saqqara, that's S-A-Q-Q-A-R-A, the necropolis of the ancient Egyptian capital of Memphis, a UNESCO World Heritage Site. We are very happy about this discovery, says Mustafa Warzi, Secretary General of Supreme Council of Antiques. Since the find of the first 13 coffins was announced almost 3 weeks ago, more have been discovered in shafts at depths up to 12 meters or 40 feet. An unknown number of additional coffins may have still be buried there, the Tourism and Antiques Minister Khalid Ani Alhani said at the site near the 4,700-year-old pyramid of Djoser. That's D-O-D-J-O-S-E-R. So today is not the end of the discovery. I consider it the beginning of a very big discovery, he said. The coffins were sealed more than 2,500 years ago, date back to the late period of ancient Egypt, from about 6th or 7th century BCE, the minister added. Evacuations in Saqqara have in recent years unearthed troves of artifacts as well as mummified snakes, birds, scarab beetles, and other animals. The discovery of the coffins is the first major announcement since the outbreak of COVID-19 in Egypt, which led to the closure of museums and archaeological sites around 3 months from late March. Dozens of statues were also found in the area, including a bronze figurine of Nefertitum and the god of the lotus blossom. Preliminary students indicated the sarcophagi likely belonged to priests, senior statesmen, and prominent figures in ancient Egyptian society of the 26th dynasty. All the coffins would have been taken to the soon-opened Grand Egyptian Museum on the Giza Plateau, he added. They would be placed opposite a hall hosting 32 other sealed sarcophagi for the priests from the 22nd dynasty, which were found last year in the southern city of Luxor. That was a big deal. Josh Gates, they yeah. opened that up, and I remember that was like a big, big deal. The museum will host thousands of artifacts spanning multiple eras of Egypt's history, from pre-dynastic to Greco-Roman period. Egypt hopes a flurry of archaeological finds in recent years in the Grand Egyptian Museum will boost its vital tourism sector, which has suffered multiple shocks since the 2001 political troubles they were having. Hashtag panic state.
Yeah, what are they doing? Why would you want to disrupt that? I mean, at some point, just let them rest, right? You hear about these mummies getting dug up, and I think there was another case like this recently as well, where, you know, they find these mummies and they want to unearth them, so to speak. That just seems like a bad idea. I mean, that's how you get cursed.
Listen, there were a couple movies in the 90s.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe you've heard of them called The Mummy.
Yes.
Starring Brendan Fraser.
That's a blueprint right there, what not to do.
Listen, guys, I'm begging you, okay? 2020 has not been the greatest year in history. In fact, it might go down as probably one of the worst years in history for many folk for a lot of different reasons. Opening those sarcophagi can only lead to bad things. Yes, I understand that they should put the sarcophagi up on display at this museum, and I understand it's this really beautiful thing they're planning out, and maybe we'll have to take a trip out to Egypt to go see these things. Leave the sarcophagi up there. Don't open it. Listen, if anything in my life has ever taught me studying both horror films, fiction, you know, the occult, etc., just anything like that, is you don't open the sealed anything. Mm-hmm. You find a witch jar buried in your backyard, don't open up the witch jar. You find a mysterious urn that with a piece of tape written over the cross of it that says do not open, don't open the urn. In this case, do not open the 2,500-year-old mummy. Like, listen, please. Or maybe you do. You know what? Open it up. In which case, then plagues will happen.
May luck be in your favor.
May the luck be ever in your favor. Pank, what's your take?
I say just leave it. Don't do it. Just leave everything. Don't touch anything, people. Just don't touch anything. What's there is there. It's there for a reason. It's no good could come from moving it or unearthing it, unboxing it. Leave it alone. Leave it alone.
I'm all with you 1,000%. I think that's a horrifying thing, and I think it's dangerous. The occult and, you know, superstitions aside, I understand this is a major scientific discovery, and the fact that they're discovering all of these mummies just perfectly intact, that really goes to show how advanced these civilizations were way before modern science on preserving corpses and stuff, man. That's insane. I don't know how old you are. What you're actually?
It's been decades and years.
You know, you're hanging in there.
Yeah, I'm still preserving. You know, but nobody's ever tried to move me around, and it's probably best they don't, because if you move me around, you don't know what you're gonna get. Just a warning.
Absolutely. Count, my last news story actually comes from Forbes, and Count, I actually have a question for you.
Sure.
Have you ever seen Jurassic Park?
I have. A fantastic movie. A cult classic, as they say, Bob.
I wouldn't say it's a cult classic.
Well, a classic.
A cult classic means it wasn't popular at one time, but got picked up by a group of people.
Right. It's a classic.
Jurassic Park, I believe, has been popular since it came out, and it happens to be one of my favorite films of all time.
How many Jurassic Parks are there?
Five. You got your first three, then you had Jurassic World, and then you had the Jurassic World sequel.
Jurassic Park 3 is a cult classic, because nobody talks about it a lot, but people like it.
Fine.
Sure.
No argument from
there. There you go.
Okay, but story directly relates to Jurassic Park, and that is, for the first time, scientists have successfully extracted DNA from insects embedded in tree resin.
Wow.
Just like Jurassic Park.
Yeah, well, if anything, we should be learning from these movies. The Mummy, Jurassic Park.
Oh,
okay. Maybe it's a good outcome.
We'll
I don't know.
Get through the article here. So somewhere in South America, a miner finds a piece of amber. Inside the hardened tree resin, he notes what seems to be a mosquito. Using advanced equipment, scientists extract the last meal of the blood-sucking insect. Thanks to the genetic code perfectly preserved in the still intact blood cells, scientists then clone a dinosaur. The novel and later successful movie franchise Jurassic Park popularized the idea that amber could preserve soft tissue even in DNA molecules over millions of years. But real attempts to extract DNA from amber or similar substances were unsuccessful to this day, and resin-embedded samples were deemed unsuitable for genetic examinations. Unlike in the movies, fossil tree resin is not a good choice to preserve DNA, a fragile molecule carrying a genetic instructions for the development, functioning, and growth of reproduction of all known organisms. When a vicious substance traps a small animal, the soft tissue starts to decay immediately and most of the DNA is lost before the entire animal is even encapsulated. Even if some DNA is preserved, the resin's chemical compounds will react with it, destroying it over time. However, a study right now is saying that they are able to actually remove it. The DNA is very fragile, so don't think you're going to be, you know, pulling dinosaur DNA from these mosquitoes trapped in ember, but they're able to do it now. Hashtag panic stick.
Well, still something I don't know if I would go go into right there. So basically, this is the plot line to Jurassic Park.
Oh, this is the plot line to Jurassic Park, but in real life.
Well, but we know how that turned out. I mean, why are we? I still say, if we can't learn from the movies, then why do we do this stuff? I mean, I just don't. I mean, we watch these movies, you and me, and then the rest of the public out there, and
absolutely,
they see what could go wrong with this. Although this case, you know, it depends how you really look at it. You may be into this stuff, but I just don't get why. Like, why can't? I think our resources and our knowledge and other stuff go onto other things instead of stuff like this in the past couple of stories here.
Listen, don't clone dinosaurs, guys.
No.
That sounds like such a dangerous idea. And you're messing with, like, the greater scheme of life.
All these news stories, I mean, they're just messing around with stuff. I mean, there's a theme to the news stories today, I feel like.
The doll had no theme.
Well, the last two had
a
theme.
The last two definitely had.
Well, the doll, I'm sure there's a movie somewhere, a doll nailed to a pole.
Well, it's not like I'm ripping these from movies, Cal. No, these are actual articles. By the way, Whitney sent in that last article.
Okay.
I forgot to give her the shout out there. But man, listen, there's a cycle of life, right? You're born, you live your life, and then you die. And there's the circle. Like, that is the thing that keeps us all going. It's a circle, mm-hmm. It's a cycle. You know what I mean? And come back, whatever it is. You don't clone something like that.
No.
You know, there's a reason for it to happen like that, and I don't think this is smart. It sounds dangerous.
It does.
Absolutely.
So at the end of the day, what you see in the movies, stay in the movies. Just, you know, use your imagination. Go out there and do some good. It doesn't harm anybody. That's my words of wisdom there, Bob.
Fair enough. Okay, Cal, hear me out. Let's say the day comes when I kick the bucket, right?
Oh, no.
I'm a living mortal, unlike yourself.
That's
true. I have a day too, you know.
Hit the big 30.
Let's say you find the mosquito 1,000 years in the future.
Uh-huh.
1,000 million years in the future. And you're looking at that mosquito and you're like, I smell that blood. I know it, recognize it from anywhere. That's Bob's blood.
Mm-hmm.
Do you clone me?
But that's, again, messing with stuff. I mean, that could get out of control real fast, Bob. What if you come back and you're not the same Bob, you're just evil Bob? And
that sounds like the plot to Pet Cemetery.
So if I recreate you, there's no real chance that you're going to be the same old Bob.
Yeah, bring it back, Bob After Dark, for the future generations.
I mean, evil Bob could do a lot of harm to the society around us.
Might also be beneficial. Instead of Bob After Dark being a paranormal show, you get like a nature observance show. Welcome to Bob After Dark,
yeah,
where we look at the nocturnal animals of the night.
It could. Well, I there's too many risks involved here, so I'm not sure if I think I would just let the mosquito be. Too much risk involved. You're fine. You're already out there in the universe.
Okay, thank you.
I'm helping.
I appreciate you're not bringing me back, by the way. The proper answer is no, Bob. I'm not going to clone you. So good job on that. I was just curious to hear your.
It's too risky.
I would agree. So yeah. Thank you for.
You're welcome.
Thank you for keeping that.
I'm helping the public.
I appreciate you, Count.
We could relive you from memories of podcast and video. That's how we'll get our Bob fix in the future when you're gone.
Oh, thanks. I'm not going anywhere anytime soon, okay, folks.
Good.
It's not like an ominous like thing here. It's not like we're preceding doom. I'm not going anywhere. You're stuck with me.
Yeah.
Bob After Dark is going to exist from now until I'm done, which is, I don't think I'm ever actually going to retire from this show. I think, you know, just quick side note. I feel like the show is going, you know, I'll be doing this forever. When, you know, Bob After Dark is a thing, like, when I'm 80, I'll still be out at cemeteries, like, leading investigations.
You'll be somewhere. Yeah.
I'll still be sitting in this stool.
That stool right there.
I just hope my stool's a little bit more comfortable when I'm, you know, when we make it big with this.
Yeah.
I'll buy a new stool for myself.
Yeah, yeah, we'll get a back in that one.
Oh, now you're talking.
Yeah.
But that's...
There's no budget right now.
There's no... The Bob After Dark chart.
It all went for that big screen behind you.
That, and you bought yourself all those... the witch hat Doritos.
That too, yeah.
And the haunted Ziploc bags from the last episode.
I did.
The
eBay charge card is all charged out.
Good job, Pat Count.
Thank you.
By the way, you guys should check out the Bob After Dark Occult Museum opening soon. We're going to have a traveling exhibit called Count's Haunted Doritos.
There you go.
I hear you're getting that into the Field Museum in Chicago, Count.
They're pretty cheap. You'll get a good deal out of it with me.
All right, folks, let's move into the next segment of the show. This is where you, the viewers, send in your paranormal encounters. This could be anything from a ghost sighting, a cryptid sighting that you found out in the woods, or you looked up in the sky, you saw lights in the sky, or something weird, stories of sleep paralysis and the things you see. Those are the stories I want to hear, and this actually one comes to us from a fan who wishes to remain anonymous.
Okay.
They write, I used to be the decorating volunteer of holiday events at Timothy Bill Elementary, and sometimes I would be the last person to leave the building other than two janitors. One night, when I was packing up some of the decor boxes to be put away the utility doors in the south hallway of the building, started shaking. But nobody was in there. I have heard stories from the former students who are now adults. Also, I'm glad it's not just me. The paranormal spooks took under the locker rooms in the gym area. Super creepy if you were organizing boxes back there alone. Just the feeling like something is watching you. I don't know if something happened to people there years ago or if it's Mr. Timothy Bell himself. Thank you so much, anonymous listener. So they were putting away some boxes and the door started shaking with nobody else being there. And apparently in the gymnasium, when you're walking around at this particular elementary school at night, you'll hear voices in the distance and such. Ghostly whispers, if you will. Hashtag Bannockstick.
Well, you know, elementary schools are interesting because I feel like a lot of people have elementary school stories or high school stories, some weird experience, and some are more eerie than others. Sometimes you could kind of investigate a little bit and pinpoint what's going on. I know we talked about when Chuck was here a couple weeks ago, Chuck Pullen,
yeah.
Pete Christ, about St. Stan's. I attended St. Stan's in East Chicago. Chuck attended St. Stan's in East Chicago, and I got an eerie vibe about it. I heard some things. There's been stories from people that have been in that building, the old school part. Chuck as well had some stories on that. So I feel like a lot of these elementary schools, though, and high schools, I mean, there's some weird vibes happening. It makes sense because think how many people went through those doors.
Absolutely. You know, I have a theory about these things. And by the way, anonymous listener, thank you so much for submitting your story, and I'll explain how you guys can submit your own to me. Every school, I feel like, has a ghost story, unless it's like this brand new building. But yeah. Every person I've ever talked to in the world has always told me about their ghost stories. Maybe they have an experience, but something that might be kicking around like their school system. We had one at my school system that we had talked about. And then once upon a time ago, I won't reveal where I went to high school, but when I was in high school, once upon a time ago, we had a swimming pool where the band room is now. And a girl unfortunately drowned in said pool after a diving accident. Mm. And people said that she still haunted the school for many years. In fact, they boarded up half the school because of that. And there were a lot of like these weird, as my mother who worked for the school system called, it was the catacombs. And she said nothing made you feel more frightened than being locked, you know, getting yourself lost in these areas of the school that like you shouldn't be in. And I've heard from teachers and different things like that, that, you know, at night they would hear footsteps through the halls that didn't belong to them or whatever the story might be. There's also other cases going around the world of, you know, like different schools. For example, there was a Catholic elementary middle school that was in the same town as I went to school at. And this story was that there was a nun who passed away on the premises. And story goes that she never actually left that. And you got to think that's a Catholic school. Yep. See, you know, yeah. these stories aren't yeah. the most frequented kind of ideas that you would share in a Catholic school. But these kids that went there swore that there was a nun that haunted this Catholic yeah. school. So I don't know.
Nun stories are pretty popular. At St. Stan's had nun stories as well. And like I said, I mean, so much history goes on through those schools. You can only imagine what is lingering on in those schools. So I think somebody should just do a whole show of just traveling the schools and finding what's haunted there.
Right? I don't think you could just go into a school, Count. There's probably
we could
some
find an unlocked door somewhere. Come on,
that's breaking and entering.
If it's unlocked,
Bob After Dark does not condone breaking and entering unless you get caught, and in which case, no, unless you don't get caught. Okay. Yeah. But don't be breaking into your local elementary or high schools. That's just plain weird. I do think though that it just comes down to building your local like folklore up.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Every town has the haunted, like I always say, every town has a block that has the haunted house on the block that the weird witch lives in, or, yeah. you know, my school is haunted. It just builds the local folklore. But you know what? In some cases, like this anonymous listener, there's something actually there. I'm not familiar where this elementary school's at. Or high school. I'll have to look into that. But maybe there's like a legitimate reason why something would be haunted there. I would argue that if something was to be haunting a school, it probably wouldn't be an intelligent haunting. If anything, it might be residual just because of all the energy that goes on there. You have to understand that there's a lot of kids, obviously, that go to these schools and walk these halls and whatnot. So it's very much possible that all this energy they leave behind, every click, a walk of life. Some kids were very popular, had a good time. Some kids didn't. So you got to think there's a lot of energy that just kind of gets brushed off into these places. So it's very possible that what they're dealing with is just a residual haunting or a time loop, whatever it is that you might call it.
Well, I would think it would be an intelligent haunting because it takes place in a school.
Doo-doo-tsh.
Right? Wouldn't that be the case?
Count, do you know the difference between a residual haunting and an intelligent haunting? We talk about it
that's
a lot
like
on the show.
Yeah, between dumb ghost and smart ghost, right? If you're a smart ghost, you...
You know, I don't... it's hard to make me crack up on the show.
Well, I don't know. I just thought that would make sense there. I'll pay more attention, I guess.
Do you take notes?
Yeah, I take notes. I got a whole notebook full of notes.
Folks, do you have a paranormal story of your own that you would like to share? I'd like to hear it. Send it in. Bob@bobafterdark.com. Send it to us on Facebook or slide into those DMs on Instagram at Bob After Dark. I want to hear your encounters, your stories. Like I said, it could be anything ghost related, paranormal, cryptid, whatever it might be.
And if you do show up, well, this is not the 5-star rating bar. I was going to say, I'll toast you no matter what.
By the way, no new 5-star reviews.
No, but if you
this is a good place to stay, yeah. Folks, because you reminded me that I forgot to mention that earlier. If you happen to be listening to this on Apple Podcast, make sure you leave a 5-star review.
And if you do,
you get cheers on the show. We haven't had one in about a couple weeks here.
Yeah, I'll cheers you personally.
There you go. Count will definitely give you a cheers.
There you go.
Count.
Yeah.
I think it's a time to take a quick break.
Sure.
For our live viewers at home, just stick around just for a couple moments. We'll be right back. And for our podcast listeners, you're going to be hearing words from a podcast that you should be listening to. Stick around.
Greetings! We are the Retro Reductopus Cephala Podcast, a bi-weekly show that celebrates all the things that made growing up awesome.
He's right! We wax philosophic about lots of geeky crap like old video games and movies, toys, cartoons, I don't know, help me out here.
Music.
Pants.
Quoting video games that don't have dialogues.
Shabibers.
Tasty news.
Unnecessarily long Japanese onomatopoeia.
Butt breathers. Uncomfortable nature facts.
Or how to install a samoplange.
And unlike all those other podcasts, we at Retro Redocubus have an exciting rotating host schedule.
Do we?
We sure do.
So, if you didn't like the guy flapping his gums this week,
like me,
worry not, gentle listener. Next week, we'll have a whole new host.
Of problems.
Hey. They might still suck, but they'll suck differently.
And you know what's really cool? Retro Redoctopus is part of the Dorkening and Inebriar podcast networks, with new episodes every Tentacle Tuesday.
Which is like every other Tuesday. We named it.
Anyways, you can listen to us at iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, Stitcher,
or any podcast player cool enough to carry the only show that celebrates all things that made growing up awesome.
And we're back. Hey, Count.
Hey, Bob, how's it going?
Oh, not bad. What'd you do during break?
Oh, that was, by the way, that's a great podcast we just heard about right now. During the break, I went around to my local school and see if the door was unlocked. It was locked, so I left, and no harm, no foul, Bob. No harm, no foul. How about you?
I was actually whittling wooden stakes.
There you go. Oh, no, that's... Wait a second.
Not for you, Count. You're okay.
I was going to say. Well, that fits into what you're going to talk about here. Wooden stakes, huh?
I think you're excused from the rule of anything, because if I didn't have you, I wouldn't have the show. So
that's true.
I think you're pretty much excused from the idea of being slayed.
The only stakes I want are the ones you could eat.
All right, Count, we're going to play a little game.
Sure.
And maybe this is a good callback to an episode we had a while ago.
Okay.
Back we had... the horror movies and beyond.
Yeah.
Ivo Trace was on our show. This was a while. I don't think that was even a podcast. I don't think it was a podcast episode.
No.
Yet. We were still just regular show at that point. But back then we did the Monster Squad Challenge, right? And this is what we're going to do here. And viewers at home, if you're listening, give yourself a little tally here, because me and Count are going to go head-to-head.
Oh, what's a game?
It's a game. That's why I just said we're going to play a game. We're going to go head-to-head. I want you guys to keep tallies home.
Okay.
And if you're listening to us live, our phone lines are also open, 219-845-1100. Count, we're going to go back and forth.
Okay.
How traditionally
can
you kill a vampire? I'll let you start.
Can I say the wooden stake?
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay, because you mentioned it just now. So.
Garlic.
Silver bullet.
In some mythos, sure.
What's the silver bullet for?
It's typically a lycanthropy or... along them lines, but I'll give it to you. There are some mythos that say a silver bullet or a silver stake. Sunlight.
Mirrors.
Don't kill a vampire.
Was garlic?
I thought the
vampire was put off by garlic. It was
But if you the garlic also burns.
Why put garlic on my burgers? So it doesn't really kill.
You're blowing your cover.
I'm the exception here. All right. So mirror is overruled.
Yes.
Okay, so wait, hold on. Give me a few seconds.
Okay, no problem, Count.
You said sunlight, right?
Yes, I did say sunlight. Yep.
Jeez. Oh, man. A cross.
Yes.
Yes.
Any form of religious object that you put faith into it. You can ward off a vampire with, like, a Star of David or an Ankh as long as you put faith into the object.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So wait, is that?
It's not the same thing as a cross. The cross
oh,
is the classic.
On. You're killing
me. You know, the cross is the classic thing, but in the actual mythos behind a vampire, it could be any religious artifact as long as you put faith into it.
Pineapple.
What?
Kind of like garlic, but well, I hate pineapple. Person. Okay, fine. Oh man, you might have me edged out here. Let me see. Give me a few seconds. Let me think. Bob, I'm gonna have to give it to you. I think you win this one. We named all the popular ones. I'm sure there's deep cuts in there as well, but
boy, dirt from a dead man's grave.
I wouldn't even mention that.
A blood transfusion gone wrong.
Is that legit?
I just made that one up, but I guess it would make sense.
I guess so. So I was one away from beating you there. Well, maybe two.
Well, I had the dead man's.
Yeah, okay. I would have got out the last round anyway.
Uh-huh. Beheading.
Well, that's with anybody, though, right?
Well, I mean, it's beheading would work. Or lighting on fire.
Again, I feel like you could do that with anybody or any creature or entity out there, and it'd probably kill them. But sure. That's what we want to put. If you just want to throw it anywhere. How about just a knife or something like that? Come on, Bob.
This is a steak knife? Count Panic, folks, by the way, when we go hunting or we're out investigating things, Count actually just carries around some of his mother's silverware from her wedding. That's the
good china. Keep the good china. They're not using it, so I got to use it.
Excellent.
Yeah. Well, Bob, I'll give it to you there.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
I had some good ones, though.
Oh, I was very proud of you. Yeah. A silver bullet, I was,
Bob Seger, silver, whatever, I don't know.
Count Panic's like, hold on, listen, other vampire, we're going to end this right now. And then Count puts on old-time rock and roll. Night Moves.
Yeah.
That's actually one of my favorite jams. Turns that on, and it's like, oh, vampires be gone.
Basically, that's what they meant by silver bullets, just the silver bullet band.
All right. Despite the fictional, like, characteristics of a vampire, vampire lore dates way back before the movies. So way before, God, I can't believe I'm making this reference on the show, but Edward, way before the Lost Boys or even Bela Lugosi, vampire lore has been around and has been terrifying people for centuries. So we got to talk about what exactly a vampire is. A vampire in traditional sense is somebody who walks of the living that is not, that must crave on the human blood in order to exist, or in some cultures, sucking their soul out of their body. So the idea that blood is a life source, that also comes back from the idea that they're draining your life force or your chi if you're in China. And I'll get to that part a little later. But because there's a long history, and I'm quoting the Encyclopedia Britannica definition of a vampire, because there's a long history of walking corpses and blood-sucking ghouls in folklore, it is difficult to pin down a distinct set of characteristics consistently attributed to only vampires. Central to vampire myth, however, is the consumption of human blood or other essence, such as bodily fluids or psychic energy, followed closely by the possession of sharp teeth or fangs, with which to facilitate this task. In most depictions, vampires are undead, that is to say, having been somehow revived from death, and many are said to rise nightly from their graves or coffins, often necessarily containing their native soil. Vampires are typically said to be of pale skin and range in appearance from grotesque to preternaturally beautiful, depending on the tale. Another frequently cited physical characteristic is the inability to cast a reflection or shadow, which often translate into the inability to be photographed or recorded on film. Folks, let's just pretend you're not seeing Count Panic, right? All right, Count.
Did it work?
Yeah, it worked. Okay, I think we're good. We're still given the image that you're a vampire.
All right, perfect.
Count, how do you turn into a vampire?
How do, personally, for me?
In general, Count.
Oh, in general. Well, I don't know if it's like this for all vampires, but usually, in my case, you know, at one point I was out in the field there and somebody bit me in the neck. And I was like, got a pain in my neck. And then Next thing you know it, I'm flying around. I got a cape, and I'm a vampire.
You know, sometimes you're a pain in my neck. Am I going to turn into a vampire? If I bite you. By the way, please don't bite me.
Okay.
Count. That's not
good. Rude.
A person may become a vampire in a variety of ways, the most common of which is to be bitten by a vampire.
I knew it.
Yeah. Other methods include sorcery, suicide, contagion, or having a cat jump over a person's corpse. Never heard that one before, but I did dig that one up in my research.
That's interesting.
Some people believe that babies that were born with teeth or on Christmas or between Christmas and the Epiphany were predisposed to becoming vampires. While vampires usually do not die of disease or other normal human afflictions, and they are indeed often said to be faster than normal, they have faster than normal healing capabilities, there are various methods for their attacking. The most popular of these include wooden stakes through the heart, as I said earlier, fire, decapitation, exposure to sunlight, dead man's grave dirt, fresh grave dirt specifically, and holy water. Holy water, we forgot that one. We have a caller.
We got Veronica on the line here. Veronica.
Hi, Veronica. You're on the air.
Hi. Hello.
Where are you calling from, Veronica?
I'm calling from Wisconsin.
Oh, you know, Count and I are actually big fans of Wisconsin, so thanks for...
I know.
Yes, how's...
The Cheese Castle, right?
Wow, we have an actual... Somebody pays attention to the Marsh Cheese Castle jokes we crack. What's on your mind tonight, Veronica?
Well, I just wanted to mention that you have a contest going on right now, right?
I do, yes. I was going to mention that towards the end of the show, but yeah, we totally do have a contest going on right now.
Like the Deck the Hollows, I think?
Yes.
Well, so I really like this contest. I just want to make sure that everybody else knows about it.
Oh, Veronica, thank you so much for calling in and sharing the Deck the Hollows story. Sure. That's the contest. We're definitely going to be sharing a little bit more about that towards the end of the episode.
Let's make a pin in it, Bob.
We're definitely going to put in it. Thanks for calling in, Veronica.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Absolutely. That was Veronica.
Sound familiar?
I don't know any Veronicas.
No.
Moving on.
Okay.
Well, so, you know, people born between Christmas and Epiphany were usually able to be considered vampires, and we talked a little bit about how vampires could be killed. Vampires are often depicted as being repelled by garlic, running water, which is a very classic one. Vampires can't cross running water. Or Christian implements such as crucifixes and holy water. But as I stated earlier, any religious symbol can ward off a vampire if you have faith in that symbol.
So like a religious statue? Or a
relic. So the idea is that a crucifix for a Christian, but if you're Jewish, you're not going to be walking around with a cross.
No.
So the idea is that you can use a Star of David to ward off a vampire because that's what you put your faith into.
Okay.
Same thing is if somebody of the occulty persuasion may use an Ankh to help ward off a vampire in that regard as well.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. Now, when you hold up the cross or whatever relic you want to hold up to the vampire, what's the impact of that? Because, like, you notice different things, like the stake through the heart. That's just impact right there.
Yeah.
Is there a melting phase for these vampires? God forbid I ever cross it.
I'll let you know if I come across one.
Okay, like, do they just evaporate out of
You know,
air,
in Buffy the Vampire Slayer, the saying goes in that no two fangs bite the dust the same way.
Yeah.
Explode into flames.
Okay.
Or they may disintegrate into dust, whatever it might be. The idea is that you can ward off a vampire with the religious implications.
Because garlic, I can't imagine garlic would ward them off. I don't think garlic could. I don't know how well garlic overtakes them. Like,
have you ever shoved garlic in a vampire's mouth?
Can't say I have. My own mouth, but that's about it.
Another quick thing about vampires and characteristics is they cannot enter your home unless invited.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I remember that. But I always go into people's homes uninvited, so I guess that doesn't work for me either.
You have the jokes tonight.
I'm on a fire today.
You know, editing Bob note here. We got to add the drum snare noise in there.
We got a good laugh track in here.
You know what? The studio audience. Someday we'll have one.
Someday.
We don't have enough room for a studio audience now, but that's
Put it on the list.
We'll definitely put it on the list. Charge it. Can you just buy a studio audience?
Rental.
And in others, they may actually be distracted by the scattering of objects such as seeds or grains and compelled to count, thereby enabling potential victims to escape. That's interesting. I've heard that before. And then, as I said, I was digging it through the research, but that's more like fae culture stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, we talk about it in Fae Lore Month where you throw out things like salt grains or rice grains or anything of the such. They're compelled to count. Maybe this relates to a certain Muppet that's on a certain TV show. That's maybe where they got the mythos and idea from that.
Yeah.
If you've ever seen Sesame Street.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Okay. Creatures with vampiric characteristics have appeared as far back as ancient Greece, where stories were told of creatures that attack people in their sleep and drain their bodily fluids. Tales of walking corpses that drink the blood of the living and spread plague flourished in medieval Europe in the times of disease, and people lacking modern understanding of infectious disease came to believe that those who were vampires preyed upon their first own families. Research from the 20th and 21st centuries have pretty much said that the characteristics associated with vampires can be traced back to diseases such as phoria, which makes one sense of the sunlight, tuberculosis, which causes wasting, pleurisy, which is a disease that thins the skin, and rabies, which causes people to kind of lose their mind and act a little aggressive. Rabies, apparently, people that have rabies are also sensitive to garlic.
Really? That's the thing?
I had no idea.
So if you have rabies, you're very sensitive to garlic there.
Rabies also help when you have rabies, it helps it leads to deterioration of gum lining.
Yeah.
So it can actually make it look like you have fangs in your mouth, as far as making you look like a vampire.
That makes sense.
Or the growing of hair or very long fingernails reinforced the belief that these corpses, in fact, are continuing in some manner after death. So let's say you die of rabies and you have all of these things that, you know, you were walking around and biting people and causing all kinds of havoc, and then you die and they're keeping an eye on your corpse thinking you're going to rise again. And back then we didn't have the idea, except the ancient Egyptians apparently, because those people were brilliant at keeping a corpse. But the people in Europe that are seeing these people go around with rabies that were attacking other folk, they're seeing this corpse like still growing fingernails and, you know, deterioration of gums makes it look like they have fangs. So now we have these walking corpses that we believe are vampires.
Wow. Real life vampires, Bob. Roaming the streets. How about that?
Yeah, it's something. It is something. There's a joke here about werewolves of London, but...
Are we above it?
Something like that.
Okay.
The modern idea of the vampire myth, long cape.
Yes.
Kind of the
traditional.
Something along them lines actually comes to us from Gothic European literature in the 18th and 19th centuries, and about that time the vampire hysteria was peaking in Europe.
Vampire hysteria?
Yeah, instead of the satanic panic.
It was like fashion.
Yeah, well, no, this was the, you know, you have to understand, people legitimately thought vampires were, like, going around just killing people like crazy. Yeah. So, you know, you would do anything you would do at that time. You'd write books about it. You would, you know, buy into the panic a little bit. And that's panic with an IC, not an EK, like the certain count back there. But we were, as I was saying, these poems and these stories would come up. Like in the 18th century poet Heinrich August, he wrote a poem in 1748 called Der Vampire, which would be spelled, that's with the Y, that's the fancy vampires right there, V-A-M-P-Y-R, about a seemingly vampiric narrator who seduces an innocent maiden. Vampire poems began appearing in the English language around the turn of the 19th century, such as John Stagg's The Vampire, and Lord Byron's The Gaoler. Those were written in 1810 and 1813, respectively. Yeah. The first real vampire story is believed to be John Polidori's The Vampire, back in 1819, about a mysterious aristocrat named Lord Ruthven, who seduces young women only to drain their blood and would disappear.
Wow. Love him and leave him, he did. Terrible.
You know, there were some other more important stories that, you know, go on from there. We're building up to the big one here. Like The Vampire, The Feast of Blood, The Mysterious Stranger, or a certain book written back in 1897 called Dracula.
1897 that book was made.
Yeah.
Huh.
Don't you have a first edition? Didn't you get it from Bram himself?
I met him, yeah, personally.
What was Bram like in real life,
Cal? He was nice. He signed a copy for me. Can't complain too much about the guy, really, honestly. Good people. Had dinner with him.
Oh, did you?
No garlic on the menu, though.
No garlic on the menu. No. Bram actually based that story loosely on Vlad the Impaler, I want to say a dictator. He was just a leader of a people who did horrible things.
Because I think... You know,
you got to understand that Vlad the Impaler was kind of celebrated almost as a hero where he was from.
Interesting.
And, like, the people there now, even, you don't mess around with, like, Dracula's castle. Like,
that's still there in Transylvania.
It is, actually, yeah. And you can go there and see it.
You could.
You can. They do tours, and it's supposedly extremely haunted. You have to understand how many people died.
Yeah.
There, so it definitely would make sense.
Do they allow people to go in there with equipment and investigate?
I don't know if they do ghost tours to the general public, but I have seen TV shows and, you know, popular folk that have gone into those places and done investigations with all turning up really good results.
See, I was confused. I always thought Vlad was from Pennsylvania.
What?
Transylvania.
Not Pennsylvania.
Yeah. Well, that was a confusion when I was a kid. I thought, you know, Dracula, vampires spawned from Pennsylvania. Later, I learned that it was Transylvania. So I got the Vania part right, at least.
Yes. Yeah. And you have to understand, so the concept right around now is when we started developing the idea that vampires are aristocratic.
Yeah.
They're very, you know, they have the gothic beauty to them. They're very rich and sultry and able to speak. And
very
they're trying to lure you in. Yes. When in reality... The vampiric like idea are these there are these grotesque, angry, horrible, disgusting, frightening figures and
no sophistication whatsoever with these guys.
But around the 20th century they started being depicted in fiction a little differently. They were no longer, you know, aristocratic. Ray Bradbury. We know Ray.
He's a great guy. Met him, had dinner with him.
Did you?
No garlic.
Wrote a story back in 1946 called Homecoming, and they talked about these more devilish kind of vampires. And, of course, then Anne Rice brought the romantic vampire idea right back with the, Interview with a Vampire series. And so we talk a little bit about where vampires come from, right? And where did it come from? So the first real story of vampire culture comes to us all the way from Greek mythology by a person by the name of Ambrogino. Hmm. Ambrogino was an Italian-born adventurer who fate brought back to Delphi in Greece. And the idea is that it began with the sun god Apollo, who in a fit of rage cursed Ambrogino so that his skin would burn should it ever touch sunlight. And then Ambrogino's bad luck followed up when he ended up gambling away his soul to Hades, the god of the underworld. And then the next curse came from Apollo's sister Artemis, the goddess of the moon and hunting, who made it so that Ambrogino's skin would burn if it ever touched silver. The blessings came soon after Artemis, taking pity on the poor young man, gave him the gift of immortality. Mm. He would then carry his curses, his burning skin by sunlight or silver, but he would forever be stuck in that form. Not only that, but Artemis gave him the speed and strength that would become a hunter whose skills were second only to her own. So the story goes that Ambrogino may actually still be alive to this day, living in Greece.
Really, to this day?
Yeah, well, he never died.
That's true.
And that's where the idea that vampires can die from silver from is that if you believe that Ambrogino was the first vampire, Artemis actually cursed him with the idea that his skin would burn anytime he would touch silver. And the legends actually trace back to the idea of the city of Florence, and he may have actually created the very first vampire clan. We don't know a whole lot about this clan other than that they were likely willing volunteers, humans who wanted his abilities. So if he was able to pass this on, people would go, oh, Ambergino, I want to be a vampire too. We have a caller on the line.
We do. We have a John on the line here.
John, you're calling late.
Well, that's okay. I mean, like I said, better beat Jack before...
We haven't heard from Jack in a minute.
He's busy writing his book,
I think. He'd probably be busy writing his book.
Well, I'm sure he's going to be giving you a buzz soon.
What's on your mind, John?
Yeah, whenever I picture a vampire, he's usually in a cave or coming out of a cave, and there's, you know, bats around it flying over his head. Are there vampiric bats, or why is the... You know, the bats associated with vampires.
Good question.
That's a great question. Some folk in some mythos believe that vampires are basically magical creatures, and they are able to use abilities in order to shapeshift, and in which case a bat is a nocturnal creature that can fly, and so makes them extremely good predators. So it's kind of the idea, but it's also not just bats. Vampires are also known to take familiars such as wolves as well, and they do hear about vampires turning into wolves as well.
Okay, so they're, how do I want to put it? So the bat is like a pet of the vampire.
Basically, and they take the form of a bat because it just hell happens that they're able to fly around and in the night just like they are. And they can be predatory and do what they have to do while being in secret. I think if you looked up and saw this 6-foot-tall person just flying in the air, you're probably going to question it. But if you see a bat flying around, probably won't question it so much.
That is true. I also like to wish you a belated happy birthday.
Thank you so much, John. I appreciate that.
And I hear there's a Hertz for sale in the area, reasonably priced.
I heard that too.
You know what? I'm sorry to break it to you both. I'm told it was sold.
Oh, really?
Yeah, somebody bought the Hearse. It was a $4,000 hearse locally here in Hammond, but last I checked, it looks like somebody swept it up.
Oh, boy.
But it wasn't... The problem was, Bob, you said it wasn't black. It was a gray hearse, and
yeah,
that's a problem for you.
Yeah, solid black.
Because I could see you and the count riding down the boulevard, pulling into the rooftop driving, ordering a veggie burger with that thing.
How about that?
I guess not, no.
Oh, trust me, John, a hearse is coming in the future. But thank you so much for calling in.
All righty, we'll see you.
Is $4,000, I know we're getting sidetracked, but this kind of has stuff to do with vampires and stuff. What's the asking price nowadays for a good hearse?
They go up there in price. That question's probably more directed towards James from Peoria.
Maybe.
Than
$4,000 wasn't bad, though.
James has a hearse. I do not.
Really?
That's next.
Cool.
All right. So I want to talk a little bit about, we move from Ambergino, who could be the very first vampire. I want to talk a little bit about other vampiric creatures that are found around the world. In China, they have the Jingangshi, which is Jingshi, are reanimated corpses who feed on the life essence, or qi, of their victims rather than blood. Chinese myths also held that if a vampire encountered a bag of rice, it would be compelled to count every grain. Various regions in Africa have folkloric tales of being beings with vampiric abilities. In West Africa, the Ashanti people tell of the iron-toothed tree-dwelling Azabazum, and the Iwi people of the Azde, which would take the form of a firefly and hunt children. The Eastern Cape region of South Africa also has the Implodulu, which can take the form of a large taloned bird and can summon the thunder and lightning. And there are the Bastille people of Madagascar who tell the story of the Ramadaga, an outlaw or living vampire who drinks the blood and eats the nail clippings of nobles.
Wow.
Probably the most famous story of vampires in the real world is probably the case of Mercy Brown. Mercy was just 19 years old when she died and was lying dead in a crypt for 2 months. It was likely basically that when she was lying there, the winter kept her body from decomposing. And when they kind of saw that, they went back and looked in that crypt. There was still a little bit of blood beating in her heart. The group of people went there. They thought that Mercy was a vampire, and they decided to cut out her heart and burn it to ashes and went to go feed it to her brother, Edmund, who was said to, was also said to dying. They believe that Edmund Brown was dying because his sister was draining his life force from the crypt. So they got the heart, burned it to ash, mixed it up with some water, and made him drink it. We don't know whether or not Edwin did consume said water, but we do know that he died not long after. So go figure, drinking ash water, heart ash water didn't actually help. Come to find out, neither than one of them actually died from vampirism. They died from a disease known as tuberculosis.
Well, there you go.
And that was the first real case that started a really big, like, thing in New England here in America that was the big vampire, like, scare of then.
How about that?
Absolutely. So from all the way in ancient Greece with the story of Ambergino to Mercy Brown and even in China, the story of the vampire still creeps and haunts the dreams of many people.
But I think, you know, Bob, it's good to learn about the history of these vampires, but I mean, you could probably do a whole episode of vampires and literature and then and film and stuff like that. It really didn't get popularized in film until before Bela Lugosi, right? What was the name of that?
Nosferatu.
Yeah, and that was like the first vampire movie, correct?
Yeah, and they quickly got sued from Bram Stoker's estate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the following movies after that, did they get permission or no?
I mean, the idea of a vampire is not copywritten, so...
Well, Dracula, though.
Yeah, I mean...
Yeah, I guess so.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, Count, were you excited to learn a little bit about
your own
history there?
I learned
a lot.
I mean, it's good to know about your family heritage and your history and where you come from, so I'm glad you could turn me into the right direction and tell me what's what here. But, you know, you talk about these vampires and they're unsophisticated, barbaric. Give me the Bela Lugosi vampire, that smooth talker, good with the ladies. That's the one I strive to be like, you know?
That's good. I'm glad you have a I'm glad you have goals.
And what about these, before we wind things down here, what about these, I want to ask you about these newer vampires out there, the modern day vampires, like, say your Twilights or your Vampire Diaries. Is there a place for them in our society?
I'd say so. You have to understand that there are still a large community of people out there in the world that identify themselves as vampires. Today, the most common idea of that, and I don't think they even self-identify, I think they just are born like that, is something like a psychic vampire or an energy vampire. These are the people that drain your spirit or your essence mentally. They're not sucking your blood. Mm-hmm. And there are people out there, okay. I think we all know somebody, yeah, that when they walk in the room and they just start talking, you start falling asleep really, yeah, fast. We have a caller.
We do. Well, can you guess?
It's 10:04. Is it Jack?
It's Jack.
Jack, I haven't heard from you in a while. I was getting worried about you. Thanks for calling.
I've been really busy. I apologize. But I hear you.
Your excuse, Jack. Your excuse.
You summoned me, so, you know.
How's it going, Jack? What's on your mind tonight?
Yeah, so I wanted to comment about the vampire. So you said that it goes back to ancient Greece. It actually goes back even further than that. Sumer is the earliest known civilization, and the Sumerians had their vampire called the Akimu, which loosely translates as snatched away, because it would snatch away, you know, people's life force. And the Akimu are really interesting because not only do they take the life essence of people, but they took the life essence of plants and animals as well. And, you know, it's said in Judaism, Hebrew mythology, that Lilith, the first wife of Adam,
yes,
actually became one of the first vampires. And she spread vampirism when she was kicked out of the Garden of Eden for disobeying Adam. what's really interesting also is that I used to be in correspondence with a writer. He was an online writer who since, you know, closed down his blog, but he was a prolific writer and he was really, really good. and he was a mystic, really. And so him and I would have these, like, email exchanges, you know. And him and I were practicing something called negativa transcendentia. And what it is, it's like, it translates as negative transcendence. And we were trying to get into, you know, the heart of darkness, not because we were, you know, malicious or anything. It was actually the opposite. We wanted to understand the darkness in order to, you know, help others. So I would do these meditative exercises, and I got pretty good at it. And at one point, you know, I had this really crazy experience, and he told me the same night that he did too. And he asked me if I saw, and he described what I saw, and it was pretty amazing because it's pretty accurate. What I saw there was a group of corpses that were sitting down, but they were living corpses. And they were in aristocratic fashion. And they very slowly looked at me. They turned their corpse-like heads, and they were able to move, but very slightly. And their eyes glowed. And then so, you know, I kind of took this as just like, you know, my mind, you know, kind of wandering off while in this meditative state. But when he described it, what I experienced, you know, I asked him what that was, and he said, "What do you think it was? Because I feel like you already know." And I said, "I think they were vampires. I think they were vampires on the astral plane." And he goes, "That is what they were." He goes, "What you witnessed were the true vampires, which are these, they're more phantoms than they are, you know, physical manifestation of things." So that's my vampire.
Wow.
Story.
Huh. Well, thanks for sharing that, Jack.
Yeah. They didn't sparkle, did they?
They did not sparkle.
Okay. No, I think the sparkling might be more modern.
Okay.
That's just modern folklore adding to the story.
Okay.
Jack, I got a question for you. Are you familiar with the idea of what an otherkin is?
Yes, I am. It's people that are able to shapeshift. They don't have to shapeshift. There are other people that identify as other beings as well.
Yes. What I was getting at is the idea of a actual real-life vampire that self-identifies as a vampire, and these
are
people.
Yeah, I mean,
there's
a
whole
serial killers that are like that.
Oh, absolutely. There's, believe it or not, folks, wherever you're listening to in the world, chances are you probably have a vampire council in your area. We have one here in Chicago.
Yeah,
I met the werewolf queen of Chicago last year. That's another kin, so a little separate from the vampire idea, but believe it or not, there are people that do self-identify, and there are people that actually do the blooding rituals, that they actually drink blood in order to survive, and they, you know, they have the whole ceremonies there. And then there are people that drain psychic energy from you, or your energy from you. So there are still people that identify as vampires even in the year 2020.
Yeah, can I say something real quick before I go?
Oh, Jack, you can say whatever you want. You're on the phone at 10:10 at night. I think I think the phone lines are yours, pal.
Okay, just real quick.
You're fine.
You brought up something really important, the idea of you know, the psychic vampire, and I just want to say to listeners that, you know, there are people, malicious people that do try to drain you of your energy. And, you know, we use the term psychic vampire, but it really is fitting because they really are able to drain you, you know, emotionally, physically, by, you know, telling you, you know, things that they want to make you feel bad for them. They're very narcissistic people, and they really are psychic vampires. And there is a way to combat them. You need to have a strong mind. You need to be strong-willed. You need to hold your ground. You know, you need to know who you are and don't give in to what they want. that's all I want to say. I just felt like that was important.
A wooden stake.
There you go.
Jack, I really appreciate you calling in, and thank you for sharing the Sumerian story. I really appreciate that.
Hey, yeah, thanks, guys.
Absolutely.
Take care.
Take care, Jack.
You know, I can research a topic for 1,000 years, 1,000,000 years, and Jack will call in at like 10 at night and be like, hey, Bob, did you know this?
Fact checker. Yeah.
Jack don't play.
No.
Listen, for everything I know about the paranormal, I promise you I'm not the leading expert. I mean, I am. I know a lot. But there are people out there who know more than I do, henceforth why I'm able to still research and learn and grow. Mm-hmm. I feel like Jack just knows.
He's born with it.
Jack was born with that idea and that knowledge, and that guy is one of the most brilliant investigators I've ever met in my life.
There you go.
He's a brilliant paranormal researcher. So Jack's book's coming. I forgot to ask him about his book he's writing by Inkwell and lanterns on his desk. Yeah. But it's coming out soon. You guys should check that out. When that comes out, you guys should now be promoting that a lot, because there's a certain somebody who's writing a forward in that book. I wonder.
You're
who...
writing the forward. Oh. I'm writing the backward. We got it. All right,
Cal. Before we close for the night, we got to talk a little bit about the Deck the Hollows contest.
Let's promote that.
So right now, Bob After Dark is hosting a Halloween decoration contest on the Children of the Night page. So on the Children of the Night, the top pinned post is where you post your photos or videos of your Halloween decoration display. Now, I'm not judging the event. Count Panic's not judging the event. We have some celebrity judges.
Bigger than us.
Pat and Rebecca from Ghostly Podcast have stepped up and said that they would like to judge your displays. Now, to the winner, get the spoils. And what that's going to be is a lot of really cool swag, both promotional stuff and culty stuff as well. We're going all out for this one. This is our big contest for the year. So I don't, I understand a lot of people are saying Halloween's canceled. And no, you could still decorate for Halloween.
Of course, yeah.
I don't hold back. I want to see what you guys got going on. I don't have a say so.
Inside, outside.
Yep. If you're living in an apartment in New York City, which we have fans that are, if you decorate, you still qualify.
Now, I think there's a little confusion here. I see people posting elsewhere besides the Children of the Night page.
It's on the Children of the Night fan
page. So
you have to...
If you submit it to Bob's page or Bob After Dark page...
I'm just going to look at it, and I'm going to direct you to where you have to go. Because I'm not judging it.
Got
to
put it on the Children of
the
Night
page. And there are people that are doing a really good job with them, and it's like, you're doing it wrong. It's Children of the Night, that's our fan page for Bob After Dark. You have to be a member of that. You just get in, and anybody gets in. We don't, just join the group.
Yeah.
Top post on the Children of the Night page is where Pat and Rebecca are going to be getting all the entries.
Yeah, they're going to track everything. We'll be looking. They'll be looking, but they are judging.
They are judging. I'm not judging.
We could compliment them, but
I could be like, dude, the people that the ones that have like submitted so far are brilliant. Yeah. I think James from Peoria is like gung hoing this 1,000%. But I have no say so.
That's it's for the best, because there's a lot of pressure in judging, Bob.
That's why I don't do it.
I'm glad we took our.
That's why I called upon Pat and Rebecca,
too much controversy involved with it.
Absolutely. I'm like, you know what? They could do it.
Yeah.
I think Pat and Rebecca are also donating some ghostly swag as well to the winner.
Yeah.
So this is a big contest, guys. So make sure you get on the Children of the Night page. Make sure you guys are entering the contest and. May the best decorator win.
How long do they have, Bob?
October 13th.
13th or 15th?
October 15th.
15th, okay.
October 15th.
I read the flyer.
Thank you. You read the flyer. So yeah. October 15th. Yeah. I don't know why I said 13th.
Well, it's spooky day.
October 15th is your last day to enter the contest. So you still have
a little over a week.
You have a little over a week to get your decorations up and your displays up.
There you go.
Get on it.
All right.
Count, do you have any words you'd like to end on tonight?
Well, for one, the show did not suck. Get it?
Your puns tonight, Count. You're killing me.
Also, I got something to promote here. This Saturday. Of course, the pandemic shut down a lot of activities and events that maybe a lot of people are looking forward to. But if you're in the Northwest Indiana area or the Chicagoland area, you're listening right now, you need somewhere to go, you're craving somewhere to go, and you want to have a little spooky fun, I got the event for you. It's the Halloween Spooktacular at the Crown Antique Mall in Crown Point, Indiana. 545 East 110th Avenue in Crown Point. It's this Saturday, October 10th, from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m.
There's going to be vendors inside as well as outside vendors if you want to socially distance and from all of them. There's going to be candy, food, costume contests, live music. Again, this is the Crown Antique Mall in Crown Point, Indiana, October 10th, this Saturday from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. I'll be out there. Bob, I know you got obligations.
I will not be there, but you could go and meet Count Panic.
I'll be there wearing the cape, and I'll have some candy to pass out and some information about the show. So coming out.
Come on out. Go meet Count Panic.
Yep, and I'll give you a toast right there, live in person.
Excellent. Count, what's your words of the evening?
Oh, man. Listen, if you're going to be a vampire out there, at least be a sophisticated vampire. Don't be one of those barbaric vampires. Nobody likes those guys.
All right, folks. Thank you so much for listening and watching another episode of Bob After Dark. To my mom and dad, I just want to wish you guys sweet dreams. And to Tiff, no matter where you are in the world, I just want to wish you the sweetest dreams of them all. Good night, everybody. And remember, the two most important rules of Bob After Dark are not all who wander are lost, and as above, so below. Until next time.
Memoriam Development.